Welcome to this Touch podcast activity, which has been recorded for Touch Oncology. This podcast will discuss the latest data for emerging agents in patients with HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer. Financial support for these medical educational activities has been provided by an independent medical education grant from CIGEN. My name is Laura Biganzoli. I'm a medical oncologist working in Prato, Italy, and I'm pleased to welcome you to this discussion about expanding treatment options for patients with advanced HER2-positive breast cancer. I'm here with two distinguished colleagues, Dr. Peter Fesci, coming from Erlangen in Germany, and Dr. Sonia Pernas, coming from Barcelona, Spain. So this is shortly the agenda of our discussion. We will start focusing on emerging agents targeting HER2, looking at both their efficacy and their safety profile. And we will conclude with a look into the future, discussing about novel HER2-directed approaches. So let's start with the first part of our discussion. In the last year, we have seen dramatic advances in the treatment of HER2-positive breast cancer. And in recent months, we have seen new agents getting approval for the treatment of this group of patients. As you can see from this slide, we have three different strategies today to target HER2. We can use monoclonal antibodies. We use antibody drug conjugates or TKIs. The antibody margetuximab, the ADC trastuzumab deruxtecan, and the TKI tucatinib have enriched this scenario. Briefly, in the context of the DESTINY-Breast03 trial, treatment with trastuzumab deruxtecan led to a significant reduction of 72% in the risk of disease progression versus T-DM1 in patients pretreated with a taxane and trastuzumab. In their TUCLIMB trial, the addition of tucatinib to trastuzumab and capecitabine in heavily pretreated patients, including those with brain metastasis, resulted in a 5.5 months prolongation of overall survival. While in the SOFIA trial, margetuximab has shown a significant improvement in progression-free survival when compared with trastuzumab. So this is a summary on the efficacy of this agent. And now I would like to discuss these results with my colleagues. And I believe one important question we have to discuss is which are the implications of the results of DESTINY-Breast03 trial in our clinical practice. So I will start with the opinion of Sonia, and then I would ask for additional comment to Peter. Thanks.
Thank you, Laura. I think it was a great review of these three great anti-HER2 new drugs. And of course, DESTINY-Breast03 results are practice changing. This was a head-to-head comparison with T-DM1. And remember that the median PFS have not reached, and the PFS for T-DM1 is only 6.8 months. So, and by investigator assessment was 25 months. So this is really impressive results with a hazard ratio of 0.2 that I think we haven't seen those results with other drugs, even with pertuzumab or in the first line with the Cleopatra study. So really practice changing results.
I found it amazing that after, 20 years after the introduction of trastuzumab and having all these other drugs in use, lapatinib, T-DM1, pertuzumab, there's yet a new technology that just came up and was, you know, propelling the treatment of anti-HER2 treatment so far ahead. I've never seen a hazard ratio of 0.28 in metastatic breast cancer. I mean, we have to wait a little bit more for the overall survival results, which I hope will be positive, but it looks like it. Yeah, it's practice changing. There's no further comment to be done.
Okay, so let us start now with a small comment on the data of the underclimb to trial, and then we will see how can use of these agents in our clinical practice. So, Sonia.
Thing with tucatinib, especially results for HER2 climb study, were also very important, considering that this study include patients with active brain mets, and what is not usual, those patients were excluded from the majority of clinical trials. So having this new drug that demonstrated not only benefit in PFS, but also overall survival, including those patients with active brain metastases that have not been treated. I think it's a very interesting and a very active drug to consider in this patient with brain mets. That we cannot forget that 50% of patients with HER2 positive disease will develop brain mets in her history of disease.
Okay, thank you. A comment from Peter on the SOPHIA trial. We know, Peter, you were one of the principal investigators of the study, so it would be important for us to have your feedback.
Yeah, I mean, we've learned a lot about resistance mechanisms. I like the approach of the SOPHIA trial, where you try to enhance ADCC, which is one of the efficacy mechanisms of anti-HER2 or trastuzumab per se. So the drug was successful in prolonging PFS, but we are talking about a heavily pretreated patient population. So median progression-free survival times are not long at that stage. They're 4 months, 5 months, 6 months, depending on the study that you're looking at. And in that situation, hazard ratio was about 0.75 to extended. Overall survival was not significant in that trial when it was first reported. There seems to be confirmation that some of the genotypes that make up for more or less effective ADCC mechanisms have an effect on the comparison between trastuzumab and mirvetuximab, but the difference in this heavily pretreated population seems to be just like a few weeks, just because of the fact that the median progression-free survival times are short overall. Nevertheless, it's a positive trial. The drug has like manageable side effects. We will talk about that later, I know. So it might have a place in the later therapy lines of the treatment of HER2-positive breast cancer.
Okay, so we are being all struck by the results of the DESTINY-Breast03 trial. So do you agree with the conclusion of the presenter that this will be the new second-line standard for HER2-positive breast cancer patients with metastatic disease?
Definitely. And because one thing that I think it's really, really important that this drug, trastuzumab deruxtecan, the benefit was observed in all across all subgroups. I mean, the slide was also very, very impressive. So for me, it's clear, and we have to wait for first line treatment that trastuzumab deruxtecan. It's also being studied in first line treatment in HER2 positive disease. So will be quite interesting to know those results. But at least it's a second line in advanced breast cancer. Yeah.
You mentioned, Sonia, that the advantage of trastuzumab deruxtecan was there in all the subgroup. And among this group, we had patients with brain mets. So What is your opinion regarding trastuzumab deruxtecan and tucatinib? Do you think we have two new drugs for treating patients with brain mets, or you think that tucatinib data are much more robust?
Good question. I think it's a most important question at that time. Especially because the only drug that has demonstrated overall survival in active brain mets is tucatinib, although we can see also activity with trastuzumab deruxtecan, although the patients that had been included in the DESTINY-01 or DESTINY-03 were pretreated patients with brain metastasis that was previously pretreated. And it seems that the efficacy in those patients were quite similar, but we need still some results in patients evaluating trastuzumab deruxtecan with active brain mets. And we know that there are clinical trials, all the DEBRA trial, also the DESTINY-012, that will look at this special activity of trastuzumab deruxtecan in brain mets. But in a patient maybe with active brain mets, it will be the only second line that maybe I would suggest to use tucatinib instead of trastuzumab deruxtecan. I don't know if Peter agree or not.
Well, at the moment, yes. As you just said, there's trials going on about the brain metastasis population in TDXD, but right now I couldn't agree more.
Okay. So thank you very much. I take advantage from the fact that you both agree on this issue to move to the second step. It is extremely important to know which is the safety profile of new agents because we have to be sure that we properly use them in our clinics. In this slide, I have summarized which are the most commonly and frequently reported adverse events with the three agents we have just mentioned. But I would like to draw your attention on the event of particular interest, which are interstitial lung disease for trastuzumab deruxtecan, hepatotoxicity for tucatinib, and infusion-related reaction for margetuximab. Focusing on trastuzumab deruxtecan, the monitoring of symptoms and education of the patient are key issues for an early detection of symptoms related to interstitial lung disease. And we know that once the diagnosis is done, we can use glucocorticoids to treat this disease. Regarding tucatinib, we need to evaluate before starting the treatment with this agent, the liver function, and we also to monitor it carefully every 2 weeks during the treatment administration, and we know that we can adjust the doses according to the severity of this toxicity. And finally, for margetuximab, we have just to take care to proper monitoring our patients while are taking the agent. So this is a summary of the major toxicities related to these three agents and on how we can manage them in order to better treating our patients. But now I really would like to have your opinion on, based on your experience, on which are the major or the most worrisome side effects you have faced with trastuzumab deruxtecan, and how did you manage this in your clinic? Sonia, would you like to start with this?
Sure. We can begin with trastuzumab deruxtecan. I think the main adverse event that we can find is nausea and vomiting, especially because there's no established premedication, but we use it every time nowadays with cortisone and also ondansetron. And this really helps patients controlling this nausea and vomiting. And regarding the interstitial lung disease and pneumonitis, this is something that really, you know, is something that is for clinicians are very it's an important side effect, especially because we are used to other drugs that also, you know, like immunotherapy, even CDK4/6 inhibitors can do also. Can produce also pneumonitis, but with this drug is with special interesting that we have to be cautious. And I think it's really, really important that the adherence to all the management guidelines and to work together with a multidisciplinary team with pneumologists and to assess properly these type of side effects and act very cautious and start glucocorticoids and stop the drug very early. Yeah.
I've seen there is a different position between clinicians about the need to monitoring the lung with CT scan, even if the patient has not lung mets. So I would like to know from you both if your clinics, you are treating a patient with liver disease. Are you adding the lung in the field of DTC when you make their evaluation or not, if there are no symptoms?
Well, I mean, it has been a standard for a long time to do the CAT scan for both thorax and abdomen if you run it, regardless of the introduction of TDXD. I think it's important for the clinicians to think of it, you know, the moment you have respiratory symptoms. And I mean, it couldn't have been a worse time to introduce that drug than during COVID, because the moment you have respiratory symptoms, you have to think of everything, but you have to. So whenever there is a respiratory symptom, now you don't only have to think of COVID, but also about interstitial lung disease, and then really stop the treatment, do the CAT scan right away. It's not good enough to say, okay, there was a CAT scan 2 weeks ago for the assessment of the disease. You need a higher resolution CAT scan for doing the assessment of the interstitial lung disease. Stop the treatment right away. Don't give another infusion and consider corticosteroid therapy early. I mean, it doesn't harm. And we have to be very careful, because in the early phase development of the drug, there has been some tragic side effects following the interstitial lung disease. So you should be very careful introducing it in clinical practice and being on alert to actually do this, you know, what you think you have to do. Respiratory symptoms, stop the treatment, do higher resolution CAT scan, consider corticosteroid therapy, and hopefully, like in the Destiny B03, there will be no fatal events following the interstitial lung disease. So these investigators have shown, obviously, that being very careful makes the side effect manageable.
Okay, but to summarize your answer to my question, you do not perform a CT scan in the thorax CT scan if you have no symptoms. So you are not running versus the diagnosis, but you wait for symptoms, even if very mild, moderate symptoms, before performing a CT scan. Okay.
But I think, Laura, just a very quick, as Peter was saying also, that we tend to perform both CT scan, thoracic and abdominal. So if there's something that it's asymptomatic, we can see it in the CT scan. So, and ask our pneumologist to assess it and start.
Okay, Sonia, but you do this because of the risk of ELD or because it's just
it's
your
practice,
way of...
Exactly.
Okay,
yeah,
so
yeah.
It's
not because
it's
of
not
the
risk. Okay, these
but,
are two different issues.
Yes,
so
yes, totally.
I wanted to put to underline the fact that if you are not used in a clinical practice to look both at lung and abdomen independently from the site of disease, you are not adding the lung just for trying to monitor or detect when it's asymptomatic LDS. Okay, LID, sorry. So a small comment on tucatinib. Sonia, you have used this agent in your clinic. What about your experience with the year and also with the compliance.
I think the main toxicity is gastrointestinal disease as well. Especially diarrhea. So I think it's very important to consider all the guidelines and educate patients with all the loperamide and to just not to wait and start prior. So it's very important. And also our nurses help a lot with that, following patient the first week, just to be sure that the patient has not started diarrhea. So this is the most common one for us. And also, as you said, as an interesting side effect, it's to consider is liver toxicity. So we monitor in a lab test, including liver function in the lab test every 3 weeks, with all the hemogram and also the including all the liver tests to monitorize properly the liver function.
Thank you. So, Peter, we are back to you for margetuximab. You have treated some patients with this agent, which was your experience. I know there was the blind study, but in any case, you can have get some hints from the patient you have treated.
Of course. I mean, you have a combination therapy with a chemotherapy and anti-HER2 treatment. So you have to be careful with everything that applies to all anti-HER2 treatments. Be aware of the cardiac toxicity. You have gastrointestinal side effects. So be aware of that the patient might suffer under these side effects. But what was sticking out, I didn't have any, but there seemed to be 1 in 7 patients in the SOFIA trial that had an infusion reaction, meaning hypersensitivity or anaphylactic reaction to the treatment with margetuximab. And we know that from combination therapies with paclitaxel as well and trastuzumab. So we know what to do. So if there's an infusion reaction, stop the infusion, give liquids, consider corticosteroid therapy. I didn't have any, but it was 1 in 7 patients in the SOFIA trial compared to maybe 1 in 25 patients with the trastuzumab therapy. So look out and inform your colleagues about there might be an infusion reaction with margetuximab, and then just act quickly and to do whatever needs to be done in that case.
Thank you so much for getting your experience to us and to the people who are kindly looking at this discussion. And so we can move to the last part of our discussion that is focused on novel HER2-directed approaches. So as you know, novel anti-HER2-directed approaches are under development. I just want to mention some of them, novel ADC. We have heard about the investigation of CAR T cells. We have seen the introduction of CDK4/6 inhibitors in the context of triple positive breast cancer. And we also know that there is now a specific interest in the study of the so-called HER2-low disease. So I'm sharing with you some information regarding these new strategies, regarding the role of a novel ADC. We are aware about the data of the TULIP trial, in which trastuzumab duocarmazine has shown a 2.1 months improvement in median PFS in a heavily pretreated population when we compare with physician choice. We have also to acknowledge that the treatment was associated with high toxicity in 1/3 of the patient, the same for fatigue, and ELD is an issue also with this ADC. Moving to the triple positive setting, we have data from the MONARCH trial showing that the combination of BIMA plus trastuzumab and fulvestrant is more active than the standard chemotherapy plus trastuzumab. And finally, I want to share with you the information that two clinical trials are evaluated, trastuzumab deruxtecan, in the context of HER2-low tumors. So I would like to start our discussion asking to Peter, which is his opinion on the results of the TULIP trial.
Well, yeah, I mean, with the ADCs, we have a very new technology, and it's amazing, you know, what is possible with these. You know, you have an antibody, and then you link a chemotherapy or a cytostatic agent to this antibody, and suddenly we're dealing with new side effects that we have not seen before. So, of course, everybody wants to get familiar with these side effects. And to be honest, sometimes you're a little bit skeptical. I mean, not that we wouldn't give these drugs, but as we have to learn, you know, to deal with these new side effects, you have to learn what they mean. I mean, the study was conducted in a very advanced breast cancer population with extensive pretreatment. And, you know, this emphasizes to have a positive study in that setting again, that the ADC technology is working really well. And I'm curious about how this will be developed further in earlier therapy lines. I'm curious to learn about the side effects that we have. At first sight, conjunctivitis keratitis doesn't sound too bad, but nevertheless, I never had ophthalmologic side effects, you know, many tamoxifen at some point, yeah, the anti-endocrine treatments, yes, but like in that extent, I never had that. I think it's amazing that we have these ADCs and that they work even in pretreated patient population, but I'm not sure where this goes yet with all the other, you know, substances coming into the scenery right now, but it's good to have an active substance there.
Okay. Do you want to add something, Sonia, on this?
Yeah, I think as Peter said, now the thing is, how are we going to, which will be the best sequence? No, after a first, second line, that it's clearly TD, trastuzumab deruxtecan, and probably tucatinib, and all beyond the third line, right? We have margetuximab, trastuzumab duocarmazine. That I agree with Peter. I think it's important to have all these drugs because we are moving trastuzumab deruxtecan and also tucatinib in early setting. And we will have probably patients that will progress on these drugs. So it's important to have new ADCs, new TKAs, or other drugs or combinations to have. Although we don't have to, it's important to know that 30-40% of HER2-positive disease are de novo stage 4. So I think sequence, it's important, but also to have all these new drugs for patients that probably will receive all these new drugs in the early setting.
No, I do agree with you also because we have patients that are surviving now so long and are taking benefit from the agents from a so long period that at the very end, when they are progressing, they will, they are still in good shape, in good condition, and they are asking for new treatments. So I really think that their HER2-positive disease is really a disease that needs several lines of treatment for trying to keeping on treating our patients. That I share your point of view, definitely. So, Sonia, what about the introduction of CDK4/6 inhibitors in triple-positive tumors? What is your thinking?
Yeah, I think it's a very interesting line of treatment, a combination treatment. There is preclinical data that supports the combination of anti-HER2 with CDK4/6 inhibitors. And we now know from the clinic, from a clinical trial, not just MonarHER, but also our Patricia Salty trial, that demonstrated that patients that are HER2 positive but luminal by PAM50, those patients had a progressive free survival benefit of 6 months, versus non-luminal BIPAM 50 patients. So I think it's definitely a line to explore and continue. And we know also that there's this phase 3 PATINA trial that it's investigating the role of CDK4/6 inhibitors as a maintenance treatment after the first line. So in this population, that it's a definitely a different population of ER negative and HER2 positive disease, this population that is ER positive, I think we have to run different strategies, and this is one of strategy to consider.
So you wouldn't consider endocrine therapy plus or minus, target agent as a treatment strategy for selected population of unfit patients? Do you think there will be a future for them driven by the biology of the tumor?
Totally. I think there's a crosstalk between hormonal receptors and HER2 signaling pathway. And it's a very important to consider, as you said, Laura, those patients will live for a long time. And to have a period of time with just biological treatment, with no chemo, it's very important. But we have to know, which is the best schedule and which is the best sequence of treatment, no?
Definitely. Thank you. Peter, please.
But if you think back 20 years, how we were treating HER2 positive patients, and I want to see results from a trial, if you think about it, CDK4/6 inhibitor, tucatinib as an oral treatment, and the anti-hormone treatment, so this would be a complete infusion-free, like completely oral anti-HER2 treatment. As we're talking about novel approaches, just think about it. So like now there's so many different options, there might be a way forward for the completely oral anti-HER2 treatment in the future.
Okay, so Peter, we have roughly 1 minute to discuss about HER2-low disease. What is it, this disease, and which are the strategies?
Well, that's not enough time, but I mean, this is another fascinating field, you know, how to think of diseases. In the past, we were using the activated HER2 pathway to treat this pathway because this would be the reason for progression and resistance. But now HER2 being on the cell surface in a lower expression, just using it as an anchor for new therapies to be treated, you know, these cells and the cells around it with the novel technologies releasing chemotherapy around HER2, somehow positive cells, is a complete new field. The data in the phase 1 trial was very promising for both breast cancer and gastric cancer. So I'm really curious what comes out of these studies, and I'm hoping for the best.
And I would conclude adding that we have already interesting data with trastuzumab deruxtecan, and that phase 3 trials are ongoing. So we will be able to give you more information next time. So now is my time to conclude this session. We have seen that trastuzumab deruxtecan, tucatinib, and margetuximab are new effective treatment option for HER2-positive advanced breast cancer. So we are witness of a new important advance in the treatment of this disease. But as you have shown in the last part of the presentation, the journey in the HER2-positive world is in full swing. So we hope to come back soon to you with new interesting data. Thank you.